Barbara and I would like to thank you for your kindness and hospitality and taking good care of us. We thoroughly enjoyed our fellowship here and discovered long ago acquaintances, just like Dean here. Turns out that our son is married to his relative, his niece or something like that. And I didn't realize that before I was here, and we could go and talk about other stories too. Now, Dean was just talking to us about some spiritual admonition and some nostalgia. That's okay. But we are the products of the past, whether we like it or not. Some of what is in our past has been good, some has been better, and some has been best. Okay, so what I shared with you yesterday, last evening, and some of what I shared with you this morning wasn't very nice, wasn't very good. So the fact is that once we came across the ocean, our story is not the most edifying. There's an awful lot of failure because freedom is so difficult to handle. The church throughout history for the last 2,000 years has flourished best under mild persecution. When there's total freedom like we have, it doesn't wear very well. Okay, so what I share with you this morning brought us up to, we could say, the 1900s, and there's so much of the story that I cannot talk to you about, because we have other books and you can read the rest of that story. But beginning around 1900, something new happened. Okay, so from 1500 to 1700, we faced persecution in Europe. And then from 1700 to 1900, we faced materialism in the context of freedom, and we didn't do very well. Okay, at 1900, something new came on the scene that had not been a part of the history of the church before in a new way. So the idea was religious liberalism, and it was born out of Friedrich Schleiermacher's and Julius Wellhausen's work in Germany. German liberalism. It's a new way of looking at the Bible. It basically explains away the miracles. I know some of that had been before, but this is in a new way. Things like the resurrection of Christ did not literally happen. Jesus did not do the miracles. We don't know really who wrote the Bible. The Bible is a collection of documents, but who knows who wrote them. And you basically doubt before you believe, and on and on. And it just turned the religious establishment of this country, as well as Germany, upside down. To deal with it, the idea of fundamentalism was pulled out, I guess you could say, of the closet to deal with this. And what was so unfortunate was that our people had forgotten their own story, and so our people bought into fundamentalism to deal with the liberalism was coming into our people as well. The winds of the world always move the curtains of the church, always, always. And so we got to deal with it. But it matters how we deal with it. So among the old Mennonite people, once this happened, we have people who are on the liberal side of things, who are willing to remove tradition, who are willing to question the past, to come up with new answers, to somewhat compromise with this new religious liberalism. And we had other leaders who were just dead scared of what was going on and borrowed wholesale fundamentalism. And we had clash and clash and clash when they had Mennonite General Conference. And it got worse and worse up through 1943. In 1944, it was considered the high water mark of that clash. And you can read about that in other places. That's not my story tonight. To make a long story short, you can't keep going like this forever. Something has to give. And so after 1944, the predominant voice, the predominant power, pushed until the other side gave in. And liberalism prevailed. And that was 1944. About 15 years later, things were really coming to a head on the church levels. So what was clashing on the leadership level it made a difference, big difference, but the laity or the non-leadership level didn't have to really face it until the 50s. And so in the 50s, it started in the West where churches began to rethink their past and their doctrine. So how many of you have read this book, God and Uncle Dale? Okay, several of you. This shows how the churches dealt with it on the local level, especially in the West. This is a composite story that happened. The base here is in Alberta. Okay, so it came east across the country and reached the east in the 1960s. And so if you've read this book, part of this book is how it impacted the East, we'll say, in the 60s. And so something has to give. And it was very difficult to be a leader in this time. But there were some men who were willing to pay a high price for what you folks and I enjoy tonight. This man right here is one of them. All of us sitting here are indebted to this man, and probably you don't even know it. If you're Amish Mennonite, your debt comes through the back door, not the front door. People like John Farry was a part of this story. And he can tell his particular window into this story. I was born in 1953. And as I grew up, I did not know what was happening. It was just happening around me. I know my parents were concerned about it, but some major things happened, and people had to make their choices. And the choices they made by the way, I did some more copies. Some of you are interested in what I presented this morning, so you may pick up everything after the service that's up here. I made 5 copies of each of what I shared this morning. I didn't have a number, but otherwise, it's up here. Please help yourself after the service. And I put one extra one up here. I'm not going to use an overhead to show this, but it's basically issues. And on the one side of this V right here, Jesus said in Matthew 10, I come to bring a sword. It has to divide between what's true and what's not true. On the one side, Jesus' words are explained away. That's called religious liberalism. And that leads into worldly wise unbelief and reason. On the other side is Jesus means what he says. And that produces childlike faith and reason. These two are incompatible. And so we were forced in the 60s to make a decision. We're going to come down this side or this side. Most of my people went down this side. If you have an Amish Mennonite background, you did not face this directly because you didn't have conference. Amish people, background people don't have conference. They sort issues out on a congregational level. But the Amish people had their own story on congregational levels, and the change-minded Amish made their own decisions congregation by congregation in the early 1900s, and most of them ended up going down this side too. Okay, so what I'm going to share with you tonight is that this was so momentous, and what was going on here, that CBS News, which is a secular news organization, was called in by a professor from Goshen. His name was I'm embarrassed. I can't say his name right now. But anyway, he called them in, and they did a documentary. They spent a whole week filming what I'm going to show you tonight, and they edited it down to 28 minutes. And what is so incredible to me is, from my observation, CBS News, a secular news organization, better understood what was going on than my own people. And so this is so well done that after we look at this, then I'm going to turn back to you and we're going to talk about this for a while. Because I know you can't get all that's being said the first time through. You ought to see this 2, 3, 4, or 5 times until you get the insight that's here. And so I would like to hasten that by talking after we're finished about what we see. And please understand that we'll never be able to do everything that we should be doing tonight. Okay, so I was 14 when this happened. I did not know it happened at all. But I took a class at Goshen when I lived in Indiana, and Steve Knoll showed this. When I saw it, I said, I've got to have that. Well, it so happens that the Mennonite Church USA owns the film that you're going to see, but CBS News holds the copyright. And so this is so important that through the years I've been showing this, and people want copies of it. Well, I have to pay $15 for every copy I make. And for a while, I was allowing people to pay for it, $15. And when CBS News found that out, I was in trouble. They said, we are allowing you to have this as an educational tool. You may not receive any money for this. And so that's where it is. It's a strange situation to have a church own the film, but a CBS News owning the copyright. But that's just where it is today yet. There are quite a few things I could say, but I think I'm just going to stop right here and get started with this, and we'll just pick this up and pursue it afterwards and talk about it. Please think that everything on here is shown for a reason, and my guess is you're not going to pick up right away, but we want to talk about, so please keep your mind tuned with the idea that everything on here is for a reason. Okay, so I saw that something happened here. So let's see if we can get this technology figured out. Okay, so you folks are technical. How can I, should I just block the app here on this side or cancel the download or what should I do? Help me.
What are the two options at the bottom?
It says cancel download or block app. Canceling downloads could cause Power Media Player to close. To prevent future downloads, select block app.
Can't you get the arrow on the top right of that slot? That'll make it disappear.
That's all it's going to take.
Let's do that for now.
Okay, so now can we turn the lights off so it shows up better? Okay, start it, and the sound should come right through the system over here.
It's going to be on right now.
Okay. Make sure.
Sean, do you have that channel unmuted?
One of the first questions that arises is, what were they saying in that song? How many of you understood what they were saying? Okay, so let me read it to you. There's a light that is shining in the heart of a man. It's a light that was shining when the world began. There's a light that is shining in the Turk and the Jew, and a light that is shining, friend, in me and you. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. With your old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks, you're pulling down the pillars of the world, George Fox. With a book and a steeple, with a bell and a key, they would bind it forever, but they can't, said he. Oh, the book, it will perish, and the steeple will fall, and the light will be shining at the end of it all. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. With your old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks, you're pulling down the pillars of the world, George Fox. If we give you a pistol, will you fight for the Lord? No, you can't kill the devil with a gun or a sword. Will you swear on the Bible? I will not, said he, for the truth is as holy as the book to me. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. With your old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks, you're pulling down the pillars of the world, George Fox. There's an ocean of darkness, and I drowned in the night. Then I came through the darkness to the sea of light. And the light is forever, and the light will be free, and I'll walk in the glory of the light, said he. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. Old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. With your old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks, you're pulling down the pillars of the world, George Fox. Now, who's George Fox? Yes. What about Quakers? Yeah, but he's really something special to the Quakers. What is it? Yeah, he was. He's the founder of the Quakers. Now, the Quakers are kind of embarrassed about this man because he had old leather breeches, shaggy, shaggy locks. But he was their founder. They didn't really like everything, but that is their founder. And they were saying about their founder, you pulled down the pillars of the world, George Fox. Think about William Penn. I've already told you how he pulled down the pillars of the world in his day, in that he proved that freedom of religion can actually work in a political unit like Pennsylvania. He actually pulled down a pillar of the world. Okay, so why is this on this DVD? These aren't Quakers. What's the point? Yes.
So I would guess it's half Mennonites appreciating Quakers and half a hippie take on Quakers.
A half on what? A hippie take on Quakers. Yeah, you got some truth there. Okay. I like that. Now, I want some more. I want some more responses on this. Okay, now why? Okay, hold on. Let me say this. Why did he say it's a half of a hippie take on Quakers? Why did you say that, Marlon?
I mean, it's the 60s. You're talking about long hair.
There you go. There you go. Long hair was a part of the 60s. So, Marlon, what was long hair symbolic of by the hippies? Why did they wear long hair?
I don't know anything specific, but I assume just to, because long hair was not conventional, it was not what their parents did, it was not prim and proper like they were raised to be.
Okay, so it was a statement of rebellion. That's right. Okay, so the other thing doesn't show up on this thing. Back in the 60s, it was cool to wear bell bottoms. Now, nobody knows what bell bottoms are anymore except the old people. They're skin-tight pants for men up at the top here, but they're big and flowing at the bottom. Okay, they're really, I don't see anybody wearing bell bottoms anymore. But okay, so that was also a statement of rebellion. Now, somebody else started to say something over here. Who did I interrupt? Exactly right. Now let's flesh that out. So what is in focus here? What are they tearing down? Oh, keep talking, Byron. So you're onto something here.
On the basis of
what?
On the basis of
Okay, you're really, close. Based on what? Yes. Did you hear any appeal to Scripture here? That's it.
The whole session was talking about fitting in, identifying with other groups in the world, being relevant to culture, and doing what feels good to me.
Yes. And did you hear that young man say he's going to cut off the peripherals? But why is he going to cut off the peripherals? He says, it's what I really wanted. Well, is that really a part of the picture? What is the first principle of the Anabaptist vision that I've been getting you to say every week?
Lordship of Jesus Christ.
Now let's all say it together. Jesus Christ, through the Holy Scriptures, is the ultimate authority. Let's say that again. That wasn't very loud. Jesus Christ, through the Holy Scriptures, is the ultimate authority. Did you hear any of that here? Zero. It has to do with what I really wanted. Well, it really doesn't matter what I really want. If Jesus has already spoken to this, there's no Galassonite here at all. It's all about me and what I really want. You see? Okay, was Jesus mentioned? I mean, on the DVD. Okay, John Howard Yoder did talk about Jesus one time. But if we're appealing to Scripture and Jesus Christ through the Holy Scriptures, he's basically out of the picture too. Now, is that foundational stuff? Is the failure to appeal to Jesus Christ and the Holy Scriptures, is that foundational?
Absolutely.
If there is no appeal to the foundation, do you see why they're pulling down the pillars of the world? Yeah. Okay, so is pulling down the pillars of the world okay? For those young people and those old people, was that okay? How did you feel about both the old and young people? What would their take be on pulling down the pillars of the world? Not only acceptable, but good. Okay, so thank you for saying that. Say, this was aired in 1967. And, of course, the Mennonites had to deal with this later on. So I would like to read to you some things here. This film did not mean... This is written 2 years later by John Howard Yoder. This film did not mean to cover only old Mennonites, but theirs was the dominant role. The advisor to CBS was an old Mennonite, a Goshen College communication teacher assigned to this function by the broadcast arm of the denomination. I skip a little bit. How did Mennonites react to how they were seen? They were very concerned about the whole matter. The initial reporting to the effect that this film was going to be prepared called forth a very wide attentiveness. The number of old Mennonites who gathered that morning to watch the electronic mirror in order to see what image it threw back to them was probably the largest number of Mennonites who ever in four centuries of history were caught doing the same thing at the same time. What they were doing was watching with great concern what picture of themselves other people were likely to have. This is a sign of an inferiority complex of a group which maintains a separate identity after having lost the conviction, which used to be self-evident about the mandate for separate identity, and so on. Okay, so they were very concerned, and I won't read everything here. I'll read this yet. A second observation about how Mennonites reacted to the film was that they thought it was pretty good. They thought it projected a picture which not only was not unfair, but was actually favorable. In none of the several group evaluations of which I heard was there any regret that we had projected predominantly the image of a social group threatened by social change. No regret that there was nothing said explicitly or implicitly about the meaning of discipleship or service or mission, or that there had been no reference to Jesus except by the seminary teachers who were interviewed. Mennonites are thus people who are happy to be known through this ancient image as long as it's not made fun of. We are not humiliated to observe that we are being described as a group which no outsider would think of joining and which our own youth have trouble respecting as long as our sincerity is given some compliments. And there's more here. If you want copies of this, you're welcome to ask for that, and I can make some for you. Okay, but we're not finished talking about this yet. Is this supposed to be over at 8 o'clock? Is that what, if we start at 6:30?
That would be a target.
Yeah, okay, so. Okay, so now we got the foundation of what's going on in this film. And I would like you to talk about some other things maybe that troubled you. Okay.
However, there was no conviction of that, and business was the most important thing.
Now, if you had said that to him, he probably would not have agreed with that. But
quite likely.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Some other comments. The microphone's back there. If you would like to talk extended, microphone's available. All right. Okay. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that because I grew up, I was a teenager when this kind of stuff was going on, and the big word back in those days was relevant. We want to be relevant to the people around us. Okay? So is that a worthy consideration, to be relevant? Now, that's not a trick question. It depends. Exactly. If we're going to be effective with mission, we need to be relevant, right? But what do they have in mind about relevancy?
What are you going to sacrifice, the truth or your reputation?
Okay. Okay, all I can say is back in those days, they were willing to sacrifice the truth. I mean, I'm here to testify to that. Let me show you something here. This is also, can we turn that off?
You can use the remote.
Okay. I think we're finished with this now. Scott Dale, the Mennonite Publishing House, printed the Family Worship magazine. And this is a picture of the cover of the July, August, September 1968 edition. This is also in the 60s at this very same time. Okay, so there are messages. A picture is worth 1,000 words. So I would like you to come up with at least 3 messages that picture is producing. Think about relevancy.
Family size.
What about the family size?
One boy, one girl.
What did the girl say in the DVD? Okay, what else did she say about family?
About not being a mother and a housewife. Is that what we're still called to do?
Yeah, there's several things going on here. Okay, what did the girl say that Mennonites always have? How many? Six children. Okay, so what's the perfect family size according to this picture? Two. And according to the girl in the college there, that maybe even this is going a little bit far. Do you even have to get married anymore? Because if you're going to have a career, that maybe that's what God's will is, a career. You women feel that way? Or do you feel like your calling is motherhood? Well, I think I know you well enough that your calling is motherhood. Okay? Okay, so this message sank in so well that my people today are not even having two children anymore. The average family size, I think, is 1.4. Okay, so we are really relevant now, except that we're not even reproducing the numbers of our own families. And also, our young people are leaving, and so we're reducing numbers that way. Okay, I'm going astray here. But that's one message in this picture. The ideal family size is two children. Okay? So what's another message in this picture?
Perfect scene.
I mean, you folks don't sit at picnics and beside ponds? I think that's so normal. I thought that was proper recreation. But do you work all the time? Yes. Exactly. This is a statement of feminism. You see, she's in charge. The children are both looking at her. Dad's looking to her too. She is in charge. And the way this is played out in my people today, we are ordaining females to leadership positions. Even practicing lesbians are ordained today. Okay? Ideas have consequences, and they always start long before the consequences show up. Okay? There's some more here. Now, we got two of the major messages that I wanted you to mention, but there's another major message I want you to find. It's too easy to see. Okay, she has no head covering. And what else? She has cut hair. And again, we're back to relevancy. Back in my day, when I was growing up as a teenager, this was a big deal. Girls would cut their hair, and they still had to wear coverings, and they didn't like that. And they were looking for the day that they could go like this. Now, does God have anything to say about that? Does God give some direction to that? Well, of course. You ladies wear head coverings, and I don't sense you're chafing at the bit. The attitude that you present to me is that you're not finding this legalism or bondage, but that you are actually free in your practice of this. Okay, so, yeah, that's a major message. Okay, so there's another major message yet. Okay, so I'm looking for four, I guess. Okay, let me back up. Is this lady and her husband who is willing to let this happen, is she in disobedience? Would you agree to that? Come on. Yes or no? If God has spoken to not obey, I call that disobedience. Okay, so think about that now for another major message. Well, okay, we talked about that before. Yeah. Is that a kind of disobedience? Yeah, he's being disobedient too, okay? The only people who are not really disobedient there are the children, right? Okay, so I don't want to prolong this too much. These people are happy in their disobedience. Do they look like they're suffering with conviction and struggling? I don't think so. And so the message that that's communicating to my people back in 1968 was, we can do what we want. We can pull down the pillars of the world and we can still be happy. And that's exactly what we did. We did that, and now we are reaping the consequences of all that. And I'm supposed to shut up here in 6 minutes. Okay, so I would like us to go back to the film now. We didn't talk about everything that we could have on the film. So I want you to comment about some other things that you noticed on the film in the last 6 minutes we have here. It's true. Did you notice how he said, I had to figure out a rationale for that? Okay, thank you. Keep talking. Exactly. What is exciting to you? What would you really want? Yeah. Then that means it's all about me, right? The authority is with me rather than what God has to say. All right, very good. Keep talking.
I guess to build off of that, what I said earlier, sometimes we go places, do things based on that versus seeking the Holy Spirit.
Exactly, exactly. Do you think you and I face those kinds of things, David? Is that real today yet? Absolutely, it's true. Yeah. Human nature is always the same. One generation to another. Thank you. All right, what else do you have to say? Well, how do they decide what they're going
to
do then? That's right. That is exactly right. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's a major point. Say that again out loud.
The assumption was that new enlightenment was far superior to the old naivete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if that's true, then we can be happy with our new foundation. Because it's new and we like it. Does that make it right? Of course not. Okay. Anything else yet? Anybody wants to share? Yes.
Just thinking over everything, there was a good bit of expression about this is the way I can serve God. So it's kind of flipped around with what is God's will for me.
Okay, so Andy, is your faith all focused on you? I don't think so. I've been in your house and I watched you. And I don't think it is. You see, I think that if everything is focused on me, then I become my own idol. I worship myself. And the Christianity that I understand, that when we love, we work out from ourselves. The bent is away from ourselves, not the bent toward ourselves. That's exactly right. That's pretty important stuff. Okay, did you hear the comment that the leadership of the Mennonite Church is quite progressive? Did you hear that? That means that the leadership was actually leading in this. And that is very true. If you read this book, you could see that. That the leadership was actually leading people to think like this. All right, keep talking.
But the reaction in that book, if I remember correctly, Chester, is really, really big to the ones who are resisting the change.
Oh, you have no idea of all the stress and the turmoil and the pain. And how do you work through this? If you have some leaders who understand what's going on and some leaders who are quite progressive, how in the world are they supposed to work together? It did not work. And eventually, that is what caused the conservative regroupings of which you are a part. Somebody in leadership paid a high price for you folks to be where you are tonight. And if you read the book on Aaron Shank, you can at least get a picture of some of that feeling. Okay, I'm supposed to sit down, but there's something that nobody mentioned here tonight. I'm just going to mention. Why in the world did they have a cow on this picture? What's the cow all about? Okay, you're on to it. Now keep talking. What's going on with the show cow? Okay, did you hear him say that she produced the highest record in the Guernsey breed? Okay, so did these people know how to farm? They were experts in farming. But were they expert in faith matters? I don't think so. It seems to me that the writers of this film, who did this film, understood that. And they didn't. It's really, really subtle. I really think that if you look at some of those pictures, maybe it's because I've seen it so many times, I think CBS News is actually making fun of some of the stuff that's on there. Well, he was talking about honesty and sincerity and integrity.
But the narrator led into
it. Oh.
And I forget the exact word he used, but okay. The idea was there that he has a very, very successful thriving business.
Okay.
And this is why.
Okay.
And then he talked about why the business was successful.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that the focus is on successful business. It's another illustration. Okay, I buy that. Okay. I need to shut up here, but I just have a few minutes to just finish something out here. Okay, so this happened in 1967. This is 1968. This book came out. I did not know this either until I saw this DVD over at Goshen. This is called Road Signs of the Journey, A Profile of Mennonite Church USA. They followed this whole thing up with questionnaires that they sent out to Mennonite churches in 1972, 1989, and 2003. And I have a whole bunch of graphs here that would illustrate this, that the consequences of this, they were actually ready to put in graphs in public and show this. And if those of you who are interested, you might want to just come to me and take a look at some of the stuff that's in here. It's just remarkable to me that they were willing to make a profile of the Mennonite Church USA. Well, then this book was published, I think, in 2007, and they did another profile in 2014, and I have a copy of that, too. And since that time, the Mennonite Church is continuing to hemorrhage. And I wonder, is anybody getting this? I mean, this all started in the 60s, or actually started before that, back with the Mennonite religious liberalism in the 1900s. It's taken like 100 years for this stuff to all work itself out. And I'm wondering what some of those people say. I know from some of my research that some part, I showed you this. I showed you this. Back in the 60s, everybody, the discerning people, the undiscerning, the young people, all had to come down on one side of that V or another. And one person said, I went down this side. I didn't know which side to go. I went down this side. You went down this side. And now my family is experiencing divorce and remarriage, and your family is not. And that's a big part of the results. The people who could not see the issues at the moment
Time moved on. You cannot stay at the peak of decision. You have to make a decision. And some people realized after it was too late that they made the wrong decision. And their families had to suffer the consequences. That's my final appeal to you. Think about the issues. Jesus says, I come to bring a sword, which means that we have to sort out and think carefully about these issues, and that Jesus Christ, through the Holy Scriptures, remains the ultimate authority. Thank you very much for your attention. Please don't forget to pick up your sheets up here on the platform. I'll turn it back to the Lord. I am hearing today, brother, some of the very things that are being said on that DVD. For example, this peripherals thing, explaining the scripture away. We're not appealing to the scripture anymore. In fact, I think Frank Reed has already spoken to some of this when he said, the young people are saying today, we don't really care what the scripture says. We want to see what you're doing. We want to see how you are handling these decisive issues. Young people, I feel for you. You don't have a lot of solid experience. And we older people, brother, are responsible as shepherds to help people think through these particular issues. And this thing of separation is one of those. We are not very discerning today. Once again, it's happening. And if you would do the Mennonite Nazi thing, they were not discerning when they were losing their non-resistance either. And I'm saying, why do we have to keep making this mistake? I mean, our story is we keep making this mistake. Jesus Christ, through the Holy Scriptures, is the ultimate authority. I don't care what the issues are. We've got to discern. I don't care what the issue is. What does Jesus have to say about this? It doesn't matter what I think, and I'm sorry, it doesn't matter what you think either. It does matter that we are in Gelassenheit to what he says. I don't know if that's a good enough answer for you, but